And we welcome now back to the program United States Senator and medical doctor Roger Marshall, Republican of Kansas. And Senator, good to have you here.
Guy, Happy New Year to you and your listeners. We got a busy couple of weeks up here, a lot to talk about, don't we?
We absolutely do. I want to start with our lead story from earlier, which is this whole situation involving Secretary Austin and the secrecy around his hospitalization. Let's just start from a senator's perspective. Then I want to ask you from a medical perspective a few other questions. But as you look at this, with so many hot spots and a very complex threat matrix around the world right now with flare-ups all over, what is your response? What is your reaction to learning that the Secretary of Defense of the United States of America was unable to perform his duties and was in fact in the ICU, and no one knew about it for days, including apparently the President of the United States?
Well, Guy, this couldn't be more concerning to someone like myself. The medical profession, I delivered a baby every day for over 25 years, and if I wasn't going to be there, if I was unavailable, I had to for darn sure make sure someone else was available. And I think that this is wrong. And what's really concerning is it sounds like that he was even deceitful about it, that he told people, the secretary told people, that he was going to be working from home. And then the number two person is off the mainland. They're in Puerto Rico. And in my view, with 120 attacks on Americans since October the 7th, 120 attacks on Americans, we need a person that can go to the Pentagon in a moment's notice and sit down with the Pentagon to say, what's our next strategy? I understand you can do some things by phone, but when it's really critical issues, I think I want to look across the desk, look a person in the eye and say, what are my options? So I think that he put the country at great risk. I hate to judge him without his day in court. I'm still waiting for some more responses. But if this is all true, then I think he should probably offer his letter of resignation. But it's a poor time to do that. It's just a horrible time for us to be trying to find another Secretary of Defense at that short notice.
Couple reactions to that. You're talking about the number two. Her name is Kathleen Hicks. She's the Deputy Secretary of Defense. She was on vacation. She was in Puerto Rico, as you said. And based on the reporting that has been pieced together, at some point they got a hold of her and said, hey, look, some of these responsibilities, some of these authorities from the secretary are now yours. And she said, okay. It doesn't sound like they called her back to Washington. And in fairness to her, because I've heard now from several people, she's a serious person. And if perhaps she had known what was going on, she would have insisted on coming back. But she didn't know. She didn't know for days, even after she got that heads up. The reason being that the secretary was, for a time, in the ICU? I mean, that is a pretty extraordinary set of circumstances. And look, my reaction was similar to yours, saying, given the judgment, given the dishonesty, given the abuse, I would say, the disrespect for the chain of command, including the president, all of that combined could very much lead, under normal circumstances, to growing calls for a resignation. But today, that's all been shot down. The White House says that he's not going anywhere. The Pentagon says he's not going anywhere. And we learned earlier that President Biden's saying if he were to offer a resignation, that would not be accepted. It seems like they're just going to let this whole thing slide and hope that the news cycle moves on.
Yeah, and I think that's who this White House is. Look, Joe Biden doesn't know where he is half of the time. So why would he care where his department, his Secretary of Defense is? I think that this is a huge problem with this White House. This is very consistent with their incompetence. And I think just that they're underwhelmed with the gravity of the situation. Gosh, I just hate that. I really think that military experience is so valuable. If you're the president of the United States or a senator, I rely on my military experiences so often. But I just think that this is a much higher gravity of a situation than the White House is letting on here. Again, I just couldn't imagine telling a mom in labor, oh, hey, I forgot to check out to my partner and no one showed up to deliver your baby. And this is a million times worse than that, you know, millions of lives at risk. This is unacceptable. Well, I just couldn't imagine the secretary having one of his generals doing what just happened. What would he do to that general that was in the same situation? Say, hey, I know you're supposed to be minding the fort here, but you checked out and you didn't give that responsibility to somebody else. This is gross negligence as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and they were dishonest, which also shows that they knew this was a problem and they were actively trying to cover it up. It really does make it worse. And as I've said a few different times, if they weren't going to fire a single person over Afghanistan, it makes sense that they would do zero accountability here, but I think people need to pay attention. I think there is now a lack of trust and judgment problem with the Secretary of Defense, and I think that that has reverberations within the chain of command, and also it should be just another data point that voters consider. Now, Senator, I want to ask you from the perspective of being a doctor, I don't like to sit here and speculate about someone else's health. As I've said, we are wishing the best for him, full recovery, all of that. But they are still being very closed-lipped about everything. Said, oh, we're going to do better. We commit to being better on transparency. We still don't know why he was there. We know that he had an elective procedure in late December, and then days later was in a lot of pain, had to go back to the hospital. It was so bad he went to the ICU. People are trying to guess maybe what the initial surgery was about. Is he embarrassed about something for some reason? It's just sort of unclear why we're not learning about it. Again, they've left us no choice because they're not really telling us anything. But one of the things I'm curious about is when there's someone in the ICU, and I asked Dr. Mark Siegel about this on TV yesterday as well, when someone has been admitted to the ICU, that is obviously just by virtue of the name of the place, the intensive care unit, that's not someone typically who's going to be working from home or really able to fulfill key responsibilities. ICU is a dangerous place, right? Would you consider that an incapacitation if someone is in the ICU?
Well, this is what I definitely agree, that if you're in the ICU, you're not on your A game. You're not able to make the decisions that require, you know, just a lot of moving parts. So most patients in the ICU, number one, they're on pain medicine, which is going to alter your thinking process. And number two, usually they're on oxygen. So you're not in your usual mental status situation right there. And then you're just so worried about your own body and your own situation, it really clouds your vision and decision-making process.
Your priorities change.
Yeah, you wouldn't go in there and ask them to change their will, right? If a person's in the ICU and you show up and say, hey, let's change your will here, or let's sell your house here while you're in the ICU. And again, the decisions the Secretary of Defense has to make are, you know, orders of magnitude larger than that. So it's not a good place to be. Absolutely, when you're in the hospital, when you're in the ICU, you should have everything checked out with your next person in command. And I don't think that I don't want to bring fault to the number two person, but they should have been shuffling back towards Washington, D.C. You know, who's the number three person? I don't know. And especially when you have a White House that's so weak on foreign policy, has very minimal understanding of how the military works, that president, the White House, very dependent on the Secretary of Defense. I think we were really vulnerable for those 3 or 4 days.
Senator, on another subject, I mentioned in the last segment that Secretary Mayorkas at DHS, he's back down at the border. There's this impeachment process going forward in the House, and he's back down to the southern border to take a look at it. And I just don't really see the point of him going there again, because it's just been the same, you know, horror show for years now. We know exactly why this is happening. His policies are responsible for it. His showing up and furrowing his brow isn't going to make any difference, but I guess just for optics and PR, that's what he's doing with this process moving forward in the House against him. What do you make of the job that he has done so far and the House effort to remove him?
Well, he certainly is derelict in his duties. That's why last April we introduced a resolution, a vote of no confidence. Now, recall that the impeachment process has to start on the House side, but we introduced this resolution last April, a vote of no confidence on Secretary Mayorkas. And tomorrow we're going to go on the Senate floor and give the Democrats an opportunity to join us in that vote of no confidence. So we certainly commend the House for what they're doing. They need to proceed as soon as possible. We need to fire Mayorkas tomorrow. We need to fire Joe Biden in 300 days.
So on this vote of no confidence, obviously that has different meanings in different systems. A vote of no confidence in a prime minister, for example, in the UK would topple a government. This would be more symbolic in the U.S. Senate. You guys are in the minority, narrowly. They still got, you know, Bob Menendez floating around, for example, because they're clinging to this tiny majority. The Democrats are. So you don't really control the floor. Are you confident you're actually going to get a vote? Can you force a vote on something like this, a symbolic resolution, vote of no confidence?
So what we can do is we are going to force a live unanimous consent. The Senate runs so much on these unanimous consent. So everyone doesn't have to go down there and vote in person. All that has to happen is one person to show up and say, no, we're not going to allow unanimous consent. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So the Democrats will send their representative, their one person, to go down and shoot this down. But I still think it gives America a flavor that the Democrats are perfectly fine with having 10 million people cross our border in the last 3 years that 1.7 million got away. So we will force this unanimous consent vote tomorrow. They will come down and shoot it down. But at least we've done something. We're trying, and hopefully it raises the level of awareness, and it lets our friends on the House side know that Republicans over here at least are supporting them.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it is a good question for any number of these Democrats. I mean, you've got even John Fetterman, your colleague from Pennsylvania, with whom I disagree on almost everything. I've not been a fan of his. I've definitely admired the way he's handled the Israel situation. He's really ticking off some of his allies on the left, and he clearly doesn't care. He's saying it anyway, which is great. And he also just said it's unavoidable that, yes, there's a huge crisis at the southern border. We have to do something about it. He's kind of telling certain truths that a lot of Democrats refuse to say out loud on this issue. There are also some of your colleagues who are up in red states for reelection later on this year. A senator from Ohio, a senator from Montana, these guys come to mind. And they might, I don't know, feel like back home they don't want to express confidence in the job performance of Alejandro Mayorkas. How on earth could you, given the outcomes? I mean, look at what's happening. How could you have confidence in him?
Yeah, I don't know how the president sleeps at night. I don't know how the secretary of DHS sleeps at night either, when we're losing 300 Americans every day to fentanyl poisoning. We've lost 300 Americans under Joe Biden to fentanyl and opioid poisoning. 300,000. My goodness. So I don't know how they sleep at night. And you're right. Those folks, those Democrats in red states, in Ohio, in Montana, they're definitely at risk. And why don't they come down and join us? They could come down, and even though they don't, they could come down and speak in favor of our unanimous consent. And that's a great idea. We may actually invite them to come down and speak. Maybe we can get Senator Fetterman to come down and speak in favor of our unanimous consent. Yeah. That's a good idea.
And if they refuse, by the way, then that's also interesting. You know, Bob Casey, who never does anything in Pennsylvania, does he have confidence in the job performance of Alejandro Mayorkas? I think these are questions a lot of these guys and gals should be forced to answer. And it starts with putting the question to them, which almost never happens. Finally, I do want to ask you, Senator, about this apparent deal that has been struck, budget deal. The outlines were announced over the weekend, I believe it was. I saw the headline between Speaker Mike Johnson in the House and then Senator Schumer on your side of Capitol Hill. A lot of people unhappy with various details. That's often the case when it comes to a bipartisan deal. We are in divided government. I know that Speaker Johnson said he did his best given the leverage that he's got. Have you looked at this proposal? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I think what I would want to communicate to your listeners is how frustrated I am with the budget process. And now we're haggling over $70 billion, which is a lot of money. My frustration is this. Just remember, we only get to vote on about a fourth of the money that the federal government spends. This is discretionary spending. Everything else is mandatory. So what we're fighting over now is this one-fourth of the federal budget. The budget process, the Budget Act of 1974, states that what they accomplished this week, we should have accomplished in April of last year, that we just ignore the laws of the land as it is when we go through the budget process. So we need to come back and put some teeth on the process. The president should be submitting his budget for next year here in 2 weeks, and we don't have this year's budget done. So, and the last thing I would communicate to your listeners is this is exactly what Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer want. They want to force all the pressure towards an omnibus situation where we don't get to review exactly what we're spending the money upon. that whenever we wait to the last second and forcing this budget process, and this is one step, this top line numbers, we needed it back in April of last year so the appropriate committees could go through the process. No one runs their business like this. No one runs their family like this. So we're trying to go back and put some teeth to this Budget Act of 1974 so we hit these deadlines so we can have a more uniform process.
Yeah.
And right now we're between a rock and a hard place. I don't want to shut the government down. This first bucket of funding has funding in it for the Department of Agriculture. It has VA funding in it. I don't want to shut the government down. So we're going to have to take a close look at it and try to put Humpty Dumpty back together.
Yeah, it's just madness that this is how Washington runs. And it's not just recently. It's now been years. I mean, various forms of this dysfunction has become the new normal. And it is, as you said, not the way anyone else could ever operate or would ever operate, except, of course, the federal government. Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, a Republican, our guest on the show. Really appreciate your time, sir. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Guy. Have a great day.